Welcome in to a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. It is great to be back this morning. Thanks for checking the show out. If you are only able to catch a little bit of it live, I encourage you to check out the podcast. It's available wherever you get your shows. Just search for the Nick Craig Show. Tap the follow and subscribe button. And if you're listening, most apps have a little rating button that you can click as well. Click on that, subscribe, and rate the podcast if you are enjoying it as we embark on this journey over the next couple of hours here this morning, talking about the news and issues of the day. So finally got everything all set up. We are again live on YouTube, Rumble, and X this morning. Thanks for being here as we dive into this. We started yesterday with this breaking story out of the Middle East, this ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. And this is nothing new, of course. This has been going on now for well over 460 days. We are approaching almost 2 years of this situation, closer to a year and a half, but we'll be 2 years if this is not resolved rather quickly. And yesterday morning, we reported that it was reported that Hamas was attempting to extract some last minute concessions, I guess you'll call it, out of Israel. And obviously, they had and wanted no part in that. So the deal as of yesterday morning was off. But it's being reported about 45 minutes or so ago from Fox News that apparently the deal is back on. This is what Fox News is reporting this morning. They say that cabinet discussions have begun at the prime minister's office in Jerusalem. Senior Israeli legal officials have stated that pending the approval of the cabinet and the government and the following implementations of the agreement, the release of hostages will take place in accordance with the planned outline. And that outline is this. Hostages are expected to be released starting Sunday, leaving a shorter window for petitioners. According to the plan that the Israel government decided, the IDF will remain inside the Gaza Strip until the last hostage is freed. In parallel, forces will begin withdrawing during the ceasefire days until they reach the perimeter area, a security zone surrounding the communities in regards to the Gaza border. So that is the latest that we are tracking this morning. It does appear that the deal is on. Of course, there is a North Carolina connection here. You have an individual by the name of Keith Siegel. He is a Chapel Hill native who has been in captivity for some 470 days. His wife was originally captured with him as well by Hamas back in October of 2023. His wife was released back a little while ago, and for Keith Siegel, he still does remain under captivity, I guess is the proper word to use, by these by a terrorist group. Right? When we boil all of this down, let's think very clearly as to what we're talking about. We are talking about a terrorist group operating in the Middle East. That's who this deal is being made with. That's who has decided that it was appropriate to attack Israel back in October of 2023. That's what they decided to do. And the big question, and I mentioned this a little bit yesterday morning, is are all of these hostages still alive? If I'm Hamas and I've just finally struck this ceasefire deal, I'm hoping so. Because if this process starts and begins, and we find out that these individuals are in a very different shape than was originally purported by Hamas, if we find out that these individuals are in really bad and severe, medical condition, right? Depending on how they've been, I think it's safe to say and safe to assume that the environment in which these people have been in for the last year and a half is probably not all that great. So that's going to be another thread of this that we'll, of course, have to keep an eye on as this process begins and takes place. It looks like right here in the next couple of days, just as Trump is about to be sworn into office. So I've got my eye on that this morning. If anything happens over the next hour or so as we're live on this Friday morning, we'll bring it to you. If not, track it over the weekend and be back with the latest details on Monday morning with it. So that's the latest with the Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal that's unfolding over in the Middle East. Turning our attention this morning to some news in North Carolina. Of course, Hurricane Helene, that is not anything new. We have been, of course, everybody has seen the destruction and devastation that that storm left for so many folks out in the western half of the state. And to the surprise, unfortunately, of none, the federal government has failed miserably in regards to relief. There's this entity, there's this agency called FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and they are tasked to step in when you've got these horrific natural disasters like we saw in western North Carolina, like we've all seen here in Wilmington on the eastern half of the coast, eastern half of the state, I should say, when we've got hurricanes and tropical storms that affect us. Out in California, of course, right now, dealing with some major issues from those Los Angeles wildfires that have destroyed tens of thousands of structures, displaced thousands upon thousands of people. That's where FEMA is really supposed to shine. Right, you've got an awful situation that takes place, like an awful natural disaster, whether it's Helene, the wildfires, Florence, Matthew, whatever storm you'd like to use, and FEMA is supposed to step in and help. Because no state has the budget, the financial means to do that, at least as our system is set up right now. Now, we can debate and argue whether the federal government should play any portion in this relief or whether this should be something that the states deal with wholeheartedly themselves. That's a different debate for a different day. Reality is the federal government has FEMA, and FEMA is tasked with dealing with this. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, that's their name. But as we have learned, unfortunately, over the last 4 months, actually, it's probably close to 4 months to the day when that storm affected western North Carolina. As we have unfortunately learned, FEMA and the federal government is really bad, at least in its current rendition, is really bad at this. It was the early stories were that FEMA in both Florida after Hurricane Milton, that was on the west coast of Florida, as well as in western North Carolina, originally reports were that if you had a Trump flag, a Trump sign, any sort of MAGA paraphernalia on your property, that FEMA was telling their people, their employees to, skip over that house. You can ignore that property. Those are just some stupid Trump supporters. We don't want to help them. We have no interest in providing relief to them. That in itself, disgusting, despicable. But that's what happened. As we learned later from a now former FEMA employee, that's exactly what happened. So FEMA's under the gun, and rightfully so. They have done nothing more than wave $750 vouchers in people's faces. There's been a lot of issues over the last couple of weeks. There's an article over this morning at CarolinaJournal.com. Teresa Opeka's got the story, and it kind of goes through and recaps the mess that this has been, and in fact has been a mess. You had individuals, and I have to pull up my calendar here to look at this, but you had individuals on the 10th, so last Friday, right? Remember how we had the at least most of the state, not here in Wilmington, but across pretty much the rest of the state, there was winter weather last week. It wasn't a lot, but it was a couple inches of snow in certain areas. So you had this FEMA deadline that was supposed to be Friday the 10th. And of course, you had this winter weather moving into the area, cold temperatures, cold weather. FEMA kept going back and forth, and they adjusted the date to the 14th. That was earlier this week. But even on the 14th, when people were supposed to be in their hotels, they were told to get out. Then FEMA extended the deadline to the 25th, but then apparently told hotel and motel operators that work with FEMA for this assistance, kick these people out anyway. It's been an unmitigated freaking disaster. Let's just call a spade a spade. The federal government can't get out of its own way. The federal government is incapable of dealing with situations like this somehow. They continue to slowly shift the deadline forward, and it's creating hell on earth for these people. Their homes were destroyed by Hurricane Helene. In many cases, literally nothing left but maybe a foundation, if you're lucky. And so they've got, of course, incredible hardships in that. They're not working because they're not living where they used to. And FEMA keeps continuing to ping-pong the ball over how long these people can stay in a hotel. So look at this. This original tweet is from U.S. Senator Ted Budd. This is back on January 14th. So that was what, Tuesday? Yeah, that was Tuesday of this week. This is at 5:49 p.m. He says, Senator Ted Budd puts this out on X. My office is hearing from dozens in Western North Carolina who have been kicked out of their hotels tonight, despite FEMA's announcement yesterday that they would extend transitional sheltering assistance. The program is called TSA assistance through January the 25th. This is unacceptable and needs to be fixed tonight. So let's just look at the context of this. This is at almost 6 p.m. on Tuesday night. You're finding out at 6 p.m. that you need to find somewhere else to stay. What a miserable situation. Ted Budd then tweeted out about an hour or so later, 6:54 p.m. I have spoken with FEMA Diane, which is FEMA Administrator Diane Criswell. I have spoken with her, and we are looking through the list of those in need of lodging. If you are in need of assistance, please contact my office. So now we're at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night. And let me be clear with this. None of this is a criticism of Senator Ted Budd. He's just the one recapping this. But Senator Ted Budd is on the phone with FEMA, his office staff, working with FEMA at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday night because people are being kicked out of hotels. It's unimaginable. Now, fortunately, because of the good work of Senator Ted Budd, the work of Senator Tom Tillis on this, who have just been hammering FEMA and Diane Criswell, rightfully so, these people were able to stay in their hotels. And as of right now, there are two different deadlines, January the 25th, and then there's another date as well, some date in March. I don't remember where I saw that, but there's like now two different deadlines that's going on. Yeah, here it is. Teresa's got it in her story. It says, while it may seem like FEMA extended the stay once again from January 25th through the end of March, the March extension is only for about 2,000 people still using vouchers who were eligible, according to Senator Tom Tillis's office. So now you've got two different deadlines. So last night, I saw a post on X from Governor Josh Stein, and it was a letter that he sent to FEMA, and it reads as follows. I'll take my camera off the screen so we can read it. To Administrator Criswell, as you know, the people of Western North Carolina have faced incredible tragedy and hardship due to Hurricane Helene. I know FEMA has been working to deliver aid, but the people of Western North Carolina are experiencing chaos and uncertainty regarding temporary housing that is untenable. Some strong words there from Stein. He says, many of these families' homes need a long-term rebuilding and are not and will not be safe for some time. I write today to ask you to extend the Transitional Sheltering Assistance Program, TSA, to eligible North Carolinians for an additional 6 months through September the 30th, 2025. So that these folks can have certainty that they will have a safe place to live until their home is safe and habitable. People in the mountains of North Carolina are facing below freezing temperatures. Next week, our state will experience another cold snap that may bring more winter weather. I know that you agree that people are entitled to pass the winter safely and securely as they rebuild their damaged or destroyed homes. The shock of the damage Hurricane Helene caused is still very real for the people of Western North Carolina. They need assurance that they will have shelter during this time so long as their home is still uninhabitable. We owe them support, not fear or confusion. My goal is to work together with all local, state, and federal partners, including FEMA, because the people of Western North Carolina need help, and they need it now. We must come together for the good of our people. I appreciate your consideration of my request to extend TSA authorization for an additional 6 months. I look forward to hearing from you as soon as possible, as time is of the essence. Sincerely, Governor Josh Stein. Now, it will be no surprise to anybody that has followed me for any period of time. You're well aware I am not the biggest fan of Josh Stein. And we'll have a story coming up here in just a few minutes about some of the actions he's taking. But I will give him credit for what he has done thus far in regards to the hurricane. We saw Roy Cooper, of course, who was in office leading up to Stein's inauguration. We saw Roy Cooper with his North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, which was a disaster. There are still folks in the eastern half of this state that are not in their homes from Hurricane Matthew and Florence. Hurricane Matthew affected the state in 2016. It's been almost a decade. And because of ineptness within the governor's complete and total purview, NCOR, the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, some folks are literally on the precipice of a decade between getting back in their homes. By the way, at huge expense to you and I, the taxpayer in North Carolina, because we've been footing the bill for them to be in temporary housing, in some cases for 6, 7, 8 years. You and I are paying for that. Not that I'm upset with my taxes going to help people. I'm upset by the fact that it's taken a decade in some cases, almost a decade, for some of this to be resolved. Because government is completely inefficient at dealing with this. At least Governor Roy Cooper's NCOR was completely useless. So I'll give Stein credit. The first day in office, he signed 5 executive orders dealing with some level of hurricane recovery and response out in the western half of the state. And now he sent this letter to FEMA Administrator Diane Criswell, who's, by the way, I don't think long for a job. I can imagine that as soon as Trump is in office on Monday, that there's probably going to be some major shakeups within FEMA. And there needs to be. But let me be clear about this. This is very much a double-edged sword. Yes, FEMA has done, in many cases, a miserable job in regards to hurricane relief. Their ineptness, their incompetence, their constant back and forth on whether people are or aren't eligible for hotel vouchers, it's a joke. So yes, FEMA needs to be restructured. I think many of you, most of you, would probably agree with that. However, in the meantime, while this restructuring takes place, as much as Trump and the Republicans would like, they don't have a magic wand. You can fire Diane Criswell tomorrow. You can install somebody new into that position, that post. And maybe that's probably a good first step. But it's going to take a long time to dismantle an agency like FEMA and get it back to a position in which it needs to be. And in the meantime, you have folks in Western North Carolina that are in desperate need of help. You've got folks in Southern California that are in desperate need of help. You have folks in Western Florida dealing with Milton that are in desperate need of help. So I am all for gutting FEMA because obviously it's not working. They're constantly out of money. Woe is me. We have no money. Yet they're spending a bunch of money on resettling illegal immigrants. So yes, dismantle, gut FEMA. But in the meantime, these folks still need help. And that's very much a balancing act that has to go on here. You can dismantle the agency, dismantle the organization, and rebuild it so it actually works for the American people. But folks in Western North Carolina, folks in Southern Florida, don't have 8, 12, 16 months to wait while that process takes place because nothing is quick. It's still government. Even as expedient as you can make the process, it still takes a long time. It still takes a while. So I'm going to be very curious to see how this process unfolds essentially starting as soon as Monday. We'll see if Diane Criswell still has a job. I don't think she should. Her lack of transparency, her inability to manage this situation is something that in private industry would get you fired. But it's not private industry. It's the federal government. And we know that things tend to go on for a much longer period of time with incompetence and ineptness because it's government. And that's a shame because in the meantime, people are really hurting. It's unexcusable. So I'll give Josh Stein credit for this. And I'm hoping his new office, which is called Grow NC, which is essentially taking what NCOR was supposed to be and restructuring that into something else. This is going to be a very big task for Stein to deal with. And it's going to be a big issue for the North Carolina General Assembly to deal with as well. Because this stuff doesn't happen overnight. This stuff doesn't happen with the snap of your finger. Unfortunately, this relief is, in many cases, very slow. And in the meantime, you've got thousands of families that are in desperate need and just unfortunately waiting and kind of just hanging out and seeing what the next thing is going to be. When will they get kicked out of a hotel? When will they get kicked out of this? Dealing with their insurance company. I haven't dealt with it personally. I can only imagine the process. It's got to be absolutely exhausting. You're dealing with insurance, the state government, your local municipality, FEMA. I can only imagine how frustrating the situation is. So we'll see if Criswell grants this, and if she does, we'll see what the Trump administration does in regards to Western North Carolina relief and how quickly some of that can get rolling. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, available 24 hours a day via the Nick Craig Show podcast. Want to remind you that you can get access to bonus content, including daily show notes, an exclusive monthly hangout where we'll chat about politics by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've got two different supporter tiers. If you're getting value or think you're getting value out of the show, $5, $10 a month. If you're enjoying what you're hearing and want to financially support it, you can do that over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. So, Josh Stein, governor of North Carolina, handedly beating Mark Robinson in the November general election. He beat him by like 15 points. 800,000 votes. The largest margin for a gubernatorial win in this state in like 45 years. Not even a close contest. Josh Stein is a progressive. Roy Cooper was also a progressive. I believe that Josh Stein is further left than Roy Cooper. In his job as the AG, which is where Stein was before he became governor, he made it pretty obvious that he was a progressive radical. And as we sit here this morning, just a couple of weeks into his new administration, WRAL is reporting this story this morning. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein issues executive order on abortion and reproductive rights. Will Doran's got the story over there. Let's read through it. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein ordered state agencies Thursday not to cooperate with potential efforts to restrict access to birth control in the state and refused to help investigate doctors who provide legal abortions and other reproductive health care. Anti-abortion groups are saying he's overstepping his authority. Stein, a Democrat who made reproductive rights a cornerstone of his 2024 gubernatorial campaign following new restrictions passed by Republican state lawmakers, outlined those directives in an executive order yesterday. Stein said at a news conference in Charlotte, quote, "I don't know what will happen in regards to the Trump administration taking effect. But what I am trying to communicate to the people of this state is that they have a champion in me for their personal privacy and their right to make their own healthcare decisions." The abortion debate is a serious one. It's one that's not going anywhere anytime soon. And it's in many cases, very politically toxic for both sides of the aisle. But I hate, I don't use that word very often, but I hate the disingenuous nature of how Democrats spin this. Reading this quote from Stein. They have a champion in me for their personal privacy and the right to make their own healthcare decisions. That's incredibly disingenuous. See, you notice Stein doesn't say they have a champion in me for their personal privacy and their right to have an abortion. He doesn't say abortion. He says healthcare decisions. Why is that the case? Because that term, that word, has a very negative connotation. If you poll 100 American people and say, are you in favor, and say, and you have to very clearly state this, are you in favor of abortions, the term, the word, a majority will say no. Or if they say yes, it will be with some limited levels of exceptions. It's very clear and obvious why Democrats like Josh Stein don't say the word abortion and say healthcare decisions or rights over their own healthcare. I hate that. It's so disingenuous. If you want to be a champion for this, Josh, then just call it what it is. Say that you're a champion for abortions. That's what you stand for. Why are you shying away from it? Why are you claiming it, masquerading it under healthcare decisions? It's incredibly disingenuous. It's incredibly disingenuous. So Stein's got this multi-pronged executive order that he signed yesterday in Charlotte, and it's pretty much the same as a 2022 executive order that came through from Governor Roy Cooper, which allows pregnant state employees to refuse work assignments and require them to travel to states with less restrictive abortion laws. However, there are some differences. Cooper, who was, of course, also a Democrat, directed state law enforcement agencies to refuse to extradite people who are charged with a crime in another state for doing something related to reproductive health that would be legal in North Carolina, such as driving somebody to get an abortion. Stein repeated that order, but he also added that state law enforcement officers now may not arrest anyone who is wanted in another state for crimes related to abortion or other reproductive health care services, unless what they're accused of doing is also illegal in North Carolina. I'm not sure. I don't think that's legal. I'm not confident that I'm not an attorney, but I'm not sure Josh Stein can do that. You're going to tell law enforcement officers who are sworn to uphold the Constitution, if they receive information from a neighboring state with a warrant for somebody's arrest, that they're not allowed to do anything about it? I don't think that's going to play out very well. I really, if this comes to fruition and Stein is taken to court on this, I don't think he'd win that. I'm not confident that that's legal. I'm not confident that that's legal. The rules in the executive order are only mandated for cabinet agencies under Stein's direct control, such as the State Department of Health and Human Services or the State Bureau of Investigation. However, in his executive order, he encouraged other elected leaders in state government to follow his lead and apply the same rules for their agencies. So now, looking at the actual executive order itself and the things, that the executive order actually does, there's a relatively lengthy list of what these things are. And for the vast majority of individuals, there's really not a whole lot there. But this is the executive order, at least as written from AG Josh Stein. Stein's executive order directs the following. Directs cabinet agencies to pursue opportunities to protect medical professionals providing lawful reproductive health care services and patients obtaining lawful reproductive health care services in North Carolina. It directs cabinet agencies not to cooperate with efforts to impose penalties, including investigation or prosecution, on medical professionals who are providing lawful reproductive health care services or patients obtaining lawful reproductive health care. The big issue with this is that in 2023, the North Carolina legislature passed a law, passed legislation changing the abortion limit from 20 weeks to 12 weeks. That's now the law of the land. Now, I'm okay if you don't agree with that. I think you're entitled to have that opinion. But regardless of whether you agree with it or not, it is the law of the land. It is the law that is on the book. And so when Josh Stein constantly says that he is not going to defend the new abortion law, that's a problem. It was a problem when he was the AG. It's a problem now that he's the governor. If you don't like the law, lobby for it to be changed. But this is why I mentioned the fact that Josh Stein is a progressive. The law is there. You don't have to agree with the law. There's plenty of laws that I don't agree with in the state of North Carolina. But I just don't close my eyes and say, oh, well, they don't exist. Oh, that law's stupid. I'm not going to follow it. Try that out. Try ignoring the speed limit in North Carolina and then arguing with a state highway patroller that you don't agree with the law. You think the law's stupid. You'll end up in cuffs on the side of I-40. It's not how it works. So this is going to continue to be a battle here in North Carolina. I don't think this is likely to go anywhere anytime soon. Now, I'll say this, and I haven't spoken explicitly to anybody in the General Assembly about this, but I don't suspect that the General Assembly is going to make any additional changes to this legislation. They set the law out there. They changed it from 20 weeks to 12 weeks in most circumstances for North Carolinians if you'd like to get an abortion. And I suspect that that's where this will stand. I don't think that that's going to change. There's just no indication that that's going to change. If it does, well, then the debate will spark again. But I have a serious issue when the governor of the state says that he is not going to enforce a law because he disagrees with it. That is a serious issue. And unfortunately, that's not going to change. Stein has drawn his line in the sand. Stein has made it very clear how he is or is not going to handle this. In the case of this legislation, he's going to handle it by essentially saying it doesn't exist, and he's not going to defend any cases. And I don't think that's good. Whether it's a Republican or Democrat in the office, if there are laws in place, and this is just maybe more of a moral thing than anything else, but if you don't like the laws, you have two options. You can either change the law or deal with it. Those are your two options. Saying, I'm not going to enforce the law, or I'm going to ignore the law, is not one of those options. So a little disappointing from Governor Josh Stein, again, as I give him credit for this letter he sent to the FEMA administrator. I give him credit when credit is due. This is more partisan politics out of the governor's office. Josh Stein is a progressive. Don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. Don't let anybody else tell you, oh, he's not. It will become evident and obvious as he spends more time in the governor's mansion in Raleigh, and really once the General Assembly gets back into session, it will become more blatant and obvious that that's in fact the case. We are streaming live this morning on our YouTube, X, and Rumble accounts. I encourage you to subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's over at youtube.com/The Nick Craig Show. That's where you can subscribe to the channel. You'll see the show live there in the morning after the live show, the uploaded version of the show as well. All of that available on youtube.com/The Nick Craig Show. You can also find the link over on the website, nickcraig.com. So, Trump. He is set to be in the Oval Office coming up Monday afternoon. The swearing in, the big inauguration ceremony will take place right around noon or so. I'll be streaming that live. We'll be watching that along together. It's on the same platforms, YouTube, Rumble, and X. So hopefully you'll join me for that Monday afternoon after we do the show Monday morning. And I caught this very interesting article over at WSOC Television yesterday. This is very interesting. The headline is this: as Trump enters office, hundreds try to meet with ICE. For the past several days, hundreds have waited in the cold, sometimes overnight, to try and get an appointment with Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Charlotte, which is the only ICE office in North Carolina is in Charlotte. I caught a news report that they ran last night on WSOC TV out of Charlotte. I want to play it for you because it's a very interesting situation. Take a listen to this.
Watching Eyewitness News, we are live at 5 o'clock. Check out this video. Long lines and growing fears outside the Carolinas' only ICE office.
Even at 3 a.m., I was still number 60 in line.
Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Erica Bryant.
And I'm Evan Donovan, in for Scott Wickersham. Even with temperatures in the 20s, people have been sleeping outside the ICE office on Tivola Road. There's fear that once President-elect Donald Trump is sworn in on Monday, the chances of deportation will go up.
Channel 9's Joe Bruno talked to an immigration lawyer. He is joining us live. Joe, not much that can be done for some of these people.
Yeah, President Donald Trump has made it clear he's going to crack down on illegal immigration. But an immigration attorney told us at this point there isn't anything people can really do ahead of time while Biden is still in office. But still, for days, we've seen extremely long lines outside of the ICE office here in Southwest Charlotte. And some people are telling us it's because they are afraid.
The weather was in the 20s and the line outside was in the hundreds. Robert Barker arrived at 3 a.m. and was the 60th person waiting.
It's frustrating. It is really frustrating.
Barker had to submit paperwork. He was originally given an appointment for last week, only to be told to come back this week. For the past 3 days, he's been trying, and after hours of waiting, he finally got through.
People line wall to wall. I mean, just, man. People upon people upon people. And they move pretty fast in there, but there's a system and it's broken.
Everyone in line has a different reason for wanting to come before ICE. Some may be trying to check in with ICE before an immigration hearing or attempt to renew their parole, which is essentially permission to remain in the U.S. for a set period of time. People who entered under the Biden administration entered under parole. Over the past 2 days, we've heard a similar thought process from many in line. They are trying to check in with ICE now before President Donald Trump returns to office.
I'm fearful. We are all fearful. The news, the gossip, that people are going to get deported, one gets very scared. But I have to take a risk.
Immigration attorney Jamila Espinosa says there's no need to rush to ICE now ahead of Trump taking office.
Those that are already in proceedings, they're in proceedings. And so they're still going to get their opportunity to appear before the judge because that's how the law is written.
She says the Trump administration will prioritize people with removal orders who haven't filed an appeal. Still, she says she isn't surprised at the chaos outside of ICE. She says many people are scared and looking for answers.
When you're desperate and you are fearful, sometimes fear will make someone be willing to stand in a line, you know, for many hours for something that they don't have to do. And a lot of it is just not understanding how the law works.
ICE believes that the holidays, as well as the closure for the National Day of Mourning, contributed to that long line that we've been seeing for the past couple of days. More personnel have been deployed here to help get through the line. Reporting live in Southwest Charlotte, Joe Bruno, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
Joe, a lot of concern out there. Thank you for bringing us the story.
Yeah, a lot of concern. And there should be concern. There absolutely should be. We allowed millions of individuals to illegally come into the country under the Joe Biden administration. Millions upon millions of individuals. That's not how our system is supposed to work. We do have a legal process for immigration. It's an expensive process for individuals that follow the rules, and it's a lengthy process, as it, I think it should be. Now, we could talk about reforms and all that, but that's not what this story is. This is about millions of illegal immigrants coming into the country under Joe Biden, who was out there waving the flag and waving them in. And Trump has said, we're cracking down. Not only are we going to close the U.S.-Mexico border, but there are going to be deportations. And that only seems realistic. That only seems fair. If you did not follow the proper procedure, if you came into the country illegally, there should be repercussions. It's something that Trump campaigned on. The question is, will he and the Republicans follow through? I don't know. But I can promise you this, there will be drastic changes, as there should be. Because what we've witnessed over the last 3.5 years is a disgrace to America. What you witnessed, the closing a blind eye, not only from public officials, but from the media, who allowed this to go on for months and months and months before they decided that they were going to, hold Joe Biden's feet to the fire a little bit, start reporting on this situation. They wanted to shove this under the carpet and just hope that it went away. Not only did it not go away, but as we found out later on, as we looked at political polling leading up to the election and then election day itself, it turned out this issue of illegal immigration was a major one for Americans. It turns out that they were not in favor of a porous, wide open, Swiss cheese looking U.S.-Mexico border. They were frustrated by that. They were in many cases outraged by that. You have the horrific stories of individuals like Lakin Riley, who is doing nothing but minding her own business out on a run in the morning to be brutally murdered and assaulted by an illegal immigrant. That's why you see the Lakin Riley Act already moving in the 119th Congress. You had a bill yesterday that was passed with, by the way, almost 70 Democrats voting with the Republicans, that is to deport undocumented sex offenders, which, by the way, was not happening. Let me read this to you. As of right now, if individuals coming across the border had a criminal history in their home country of sexual offenses, domestic violence, stalking, and child abuse or neglect, they were still allowed into the country. They were still allowed into the country. They are here now. And according to Nancy Mace, who spoke yesterday on the House floor, these individuals are currently roaming our streets. Representative Mark Harris, who represents, he's a Congressional District 8 here in North Carolina. He was on the House floor yesterday speaking in favor of this directive, House Resolution 30, which, by the way, passed 274 to 145. 145 Democrats in Congress did not think it was appropriate to vote in favor of the Preventing Violence Against Women by Illegal Aliens Act. If that just doesn't tell you everything you need to know about Democrats. If that just doesn't tell you everything you need to know. This is Mark Harris on the floor of the House yesterday. Take a listen.
Gentleman from North Carolina, Mr. Harris.
The gentleman is recognized.
I thank the gentlewoman for yielding. Mr. Speaker, I rise today in support of H.R. 30, the Preventing Violence Against Women by Illegal Aliens Act. Mr. Speaker, common sense dictates if an illegal alien is in our country and they commit a sex offense or domestic violence, they should be deported immediately. Common sense dictates if an alien is at the border and they've committed these kinds of egregious crimes in their past, they should not be allowed to take one step onto American soil. Anything short of this standard is a complete and utter failure to protect American women and girls. This bill before us today ensures just that. As Republicans, we've been called to clean up Biden's border crisis And that means not only deport illegal aliens, sex offenders, and abusers, but we must stop them from coming to our country in the first place. It is common sense that the legislation before us today codifies this standard. The Preventing Violence Against Women by Illegal Aliens Act shouldn't be controversial. Sadly, as we saw last week with the Lake and Riley Act, many of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle will use any excuse to oppose common sense border security. I stand on behalf of my constituents in North Carolina's 8th Congressional District to urge my colleagues to support this crucial initiative in our fight to keep our citizens safe. And I yield back my time.
How can this even be controversial? How the hell could you vote against this? It's beyond the realm of understanding. It's beyond the realm of even being able to bring forward a salient argument as to why this legislation is not good. But as we saw yesterday, 145 Democrats said, no, that doesn't sound right. Illegal immigrants in the country that came through Biden's border should be allowed to sexually assault women and girls and whoever in our country. And now we don't need to deport them. Now we'll expend more taxpayer dollars sending them through the judicial system. That's a joke. But that's what happened. But interestingly enough, 61 Democrats crossed the aisle on this. And that goes to show you the fracturing that's currently has taken place and continues to take place within the Democrat Party. When you have 61 Democrats crossing the aisle on a piece of legislation like this, this goes to show you the fracturing that's taken place. Those Democrats, including, by the way, Don Davis, who he represents, is a Democrat, represents the 1st Congressional District here in North Carolina, voted in favor of it, as he should have, because it is clear, common sense legislation. Yet 145 Dems said, nah, doesn't sound right to me. Hey, you've got a rapist coming in from South America? Yeah, wave him through the border. Who cares? I'm sure he won't commit those same acts in America. I guess that's what the Democrats think. What a disgrace. This is the kind of stuff that Trump is cleaning up. This is the kind of stuff that the American people as a whole support. And it's the reason that Trump won not only the Electoral College, but the same reason that he won the popular vote. The American people are disgusted by this, as they should be, because it is inherently disgusting. It should not, I mean, the fact that we even are talking about this, that this wasn't a unanimous vote in the House. I mean, how do you go to bed at night as a Democrat that didn't vote in favor of this? It's again, beyond the realm of even wrapping your head around. There's no legitimate argument that can be made. So it passed the House. It'll make its way over to the Senate. Obviously, a Republican majority there should sweep right through. And then onto the Oval Office come late in the day on Monday, hopefully. That's how this needs to go. Great to hear those comments there from Congressman Mark Harris. Good stuff. Want to remind you, if you want to support the program and get additional bonus content, including daily show notes and exclusive behind-the-scenes information, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've got two tiers in which you can support the show, a $5 and $10 a month plan. With that, you get access to those daily show notes, bonus content, and really supporting the program financially as we trek in here on the Nick Craig Show. Patreon.com/Nick Craig or visit nickcraig.com and click on the Patreon tab. Well, there's an exciting experiment coming to Wilmington. It's called a social district. We'll take a quick break here on the Nick Craig Show and talk about that. We've got a video from Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell, and we'll talk about those details coming up. You're listening to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget you can check out the podcast 24/7 in your favorite podcast app by searching for the Nick Craig Show. Tap the subscribe and follow button, and you'll get a new show delivered to your smartphone probably around 9:30 each and every weekday morning. It's the Nick Craig Show podcast. Download and subscribe now. So, social districts. This is something that goes back to September of 2021. That's when the General Assembly here in North Carolina passed a law that allowed cities and county governments to create social districts. Now, what is a social district? It's something that allows people to open carry alcohol away from places than they buy it from. Now, here in Wilmington, you've seen, if you've been in downtown, you'll see that some businesses have... They look like the size of like a hockey puck. It's a little metal medallion that is like stamped into the concrete. And you'll notice that downtown with some places that have dining out on the sidewalk, places like Front Street Brewery, Beer Barrio, places like that that have outdoor dining. They've got these medallions so that individuals can consume alcohol while they're out in their patio. However, you can't go beyond that limit. At that point, you'd be breaking open container laws. So the General Assembly passed this legislation back in 2021 that allows, as I mentioned, cities or counties to create social districts, smaller geographical areas in which you don't have to deal with the medallions. It is an area in which you can purchase alcohol from someplace and openly walk around. Now, you have to, as I note, purchase the alcohol from a business that is participating. The alcohol is put in a specialty cup that denotes that it is part of this social district, and Wilmington is on the precipice of getting one of those. Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell put a video out on social media last week describing this social district and actually talking about the couple of trial periods that are going to take place here in North Carolina. He put this video out on his Instagram and Facebook, and well, you hear from him what exactly is going to be going on here.
Hey, Wilmington. I'm Councilman Luke Waddell, and I want to talk about something exciting happening in downtown Wilmington, specifically in the Brooklyn Arts District. A brand new social district pilot project that I believe could bring even more energy to our growing downtown scene. So, what is a social district? It's a designated area where adults 21 and over can enjoy an alcoholic drink outside legally, as long as it's purchased from a participating business. This isn't about partying in the streets. It's about creating a vibrant space that supports our local bars, restaurants, and small businesses. So here's the plan. The pilot will run on three Saturdays, February 1st, February 8th, and February 15th. From noon to 5 p.m., you can sip and stroll throughout the Brooklyn Arts District. All drinks must be in special cups provided by participating businesses, so no outside alcohol will be allowed. The best part about this, the program costs the city nothing. Local businesses are handling everything from trash to signage. This is a big, exciting step for Wilmington and a great way to support our local economy while exploring what a permanent social district might look like and the data behind it. So whether you're a local or you're just visiting, come check it out. Let us know what you think. I think we can make this a success for our community. I look forward to seeing you in the Brooklyn Arts District.
So that's Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell, as he mentioned those dates, February 1st, 8th, and 15th. I've got this map that was put together. It's over at Port City Daily this morning that looks at this social district in downtown Wilmington. So you can see you've got these cross streets here from essentially Flytrap Brewery, so Red Cross, all the way up 4th Street. This is 3rd. This is the Live Oak Bank Pavilion, so the map's kind of inverted. You're looking towards the river. And you can see it's the entire Brooklyn Arts District all the way up to Taylor Street. So this is going to be the area that is going to have these, is going to be testing this out these first couple of Saturdays in the month of February. Now, I found this article that was over at Spectrum News, actually wrote this. And this is it's the article's almost a year old. It's back from March of last year, and with that, it looks at the time. This was March of 2024. There were 55 of these social districts in the state. And they show the map here of where all they are. Of course, you'll notice, and again, at the time, March, is there was a huge gap here in southeastern North Carolina. We had not gone through with the process of creating one of these social districts, which I think is going to be great. Now, as Councilman Waddell noted, and we'll hopefully catch up with him after these pilots are said and done. And again, the city's using this and trying to see how this goes. If it ends up going great, maybe it's something that's on a permanent basis, which is how these other social districts are set up across the state. If it's not, if there's issues, maybe they need to go back to the drawing board, modify things. Who knows? That's why you do a pilot program. So Port City Daily's got the article here this morning. It was passed earlier this month. The Wilmington City Council voted in favor of it 4-2. Democrats Kevin Spears and Celette Andrews voted, of course, not in favor of it. And so that's the Brooklyn Arts District is going to be that testing ground. So BAD, which is the Brooklyn Arts District, is planning these events, including a coffee crawl on February 1st, a sports day before the Super Bowl on February 8th, and a what they're calling a love fest, which is a combination of Valentine's Day events and a Western North Carolina fundraiser on the 15th. In this case, because of this being a pilot program and it's very narrowly tailored, the social district is only active in daytime hours from noon to 5 p.m. I get it. Again, long term, those hours probably need to be adjusted. So from noon to 5, February 1st, 8th, and 15th, you can go down to the Brooklyn Arts District, purchase an alcoholic beverage from one of many places that sell it in that area, and freely walk around, which is great. Council member and assistant district attorney David Joyner told Port City Daily before the holidays that the city council has received a lot of requests from the community about the potential of these social districts, and that makes sense. It's been in state law since 2021, or actually it was passed in 2021 by the GA. I think the governor signed it in early 2022. And there's more than 50 of these that are already in place. Brooklyn Arts District business owner Tara English and Scott Wagner brought forth the social district proposal to the city in October of last year with the plan to fully map out 20 participating businesses within the Brooklyn Arts District. They work with city staff and Wilmington Downtown Inc. to solidify the plans. It's set up for participants to purchase up to 2 beers or wine beverages or 1 liquor drink per establishment to walk through the district freely during the active days and times. Again, 12 to noon on those Saturdays. The drinks must be finished and disposed of before entering another ABC-permitted restaurant or bar. It is illegal to bring in outside drinks from one bar to another, according to the ABC Commission, who controls all statewide liquor stuff here in the state. The alcohol can only be purchased from businesses in the Brooklyn Arts District in specialized cups containing no more than 16 ounces and are stamped with the logo of the district, as well as a Drink Responsibly B21 tag. The social district does not permit brown bagging, meaning alcohol beverages cannot be brought in from elsewhere. Councilman Joyner expressed concerns regarding public safety in the event there would be nuisance drinkers, no additional police or fire personnel are needed, and no city streets will be closed. WDDI is providing ambassadors to monitor the area and help individuals who may need it during that period. I think this is a great idea. And yes, you obviously have to manage getting plastered and being a drunk a-hole and enjoying your Saturday afternoon in downtown Wilmington. There is a line there. I'll be the first to admit there is a line there. And it's something that absolutely needs to be straddled. But we've seen this happen in other areas of the state. There's well over 50 of these social districts established. And by the way, in some major areas, looking back at the Spectrum News article, there's a whole bunch of these in Raleigh, Cary over in Durham, Pittsburgh, a couple in around the Charlotte area, Gastonia, the Plaza Middlewood Social District in Charlotte, a couple districts in Pineville. So there is evidence that this works, but it's a pilot program. So that'll be pretty cool as we turn the calendar into February. Those first 3 Saturdays, the 1st, 8th, and 15th, you'll be able to go to the Brooklyn Arts District. Again, I'll pull up the map. You'll be able to head down to the Brooklyn Arts District, pick up beer, wine, or liquor from an establishment that's participating. Over 20 will be. And you'll be able to just walk and mosey around and enjoy it. Now, obviously, this is going to be a much more popular, if this is to go forward long term, this is something that will be much more popular in the spring and summer months. We are expecting potentially some snowfall in the Wilmington area coming up next week. Not diving into that today. We'll look at that on Monday. See how everything shakes out over the weekend. This to me seems like something that could be really great for downtown Wilmington. Downtown is obviously bustling right now. A lot of new places opening up. Lots of new businesses operating. And I think it would make sense if this is to go forward that we see some more of these social art district, or more of these social districts pop up. Now, first thing that comes to my mind is the Cargo District. If you haven't been over there recently, it's phenomenal. They've done an absolutely fantastic job with the Cargo District. There's a new barcade that just opened not a while ago, a little bit ago. You got bars and restaurants in there. It's phenomenal. And so to see a couple of these different social districts within the city of Wilmington, I think would be great. It'd be great for business. It'd be great for individuals. Especially when it's so nice outside, you can go and mosey around. And again, you do have to balance between individuals doing this in a responsible, respectful manner and just being drunk and out of their mind. So that's going to be happening. The link for this will be in our show notes over at patreon.com/The Nick Craig Show. Folks, I'm going to sacrifice. Tell you this firsthand. I will put this to the test. I will be heading down to one of these events and I will report back. That's the hard hitting reporting that we'll get into here on the Nick Craig Show. I'll head down there maybe that first weekend in February, and I'll report back, and we'll see how it goes. So if you're looking for something to do those first couple of weekends in February, head on down to the Brooklyn Arts District and check out their social district. Pretty cool stuff. I look forward to seeing how this ends up shaking out. Don't forget, you can follow me on X. The show streams live on X weekday mornings at 7. Also, tweeting news and various information throughout the day. It's x.com/Nicholas M. Craig or just Nicholas M. Craig on X. Give me a follow over there. You can watch the show live and keep up to date with other news and stories throughout the day. So that's going to do it for Friday. Monday, a very exciting day. I'm making my way up to D.C. a little bit later on today to attend the North Carolina inaugural ball. Very much looking forward to that. And we'll report back, and we'll be back Monday morning. We'll take a look at Trump's first 100 days in office. Some of the agendas, some of the priorities of the Trump administration, Republicans in Congress. We'll do that. We'll preview the inauguration. We'll reset and then come back on around noon. We'll be streaming that live. It won't be on the podcast, but it will be streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, in which we'll dive into, well, the inauguration of the 47th president of the United States in Donald Trump. So that's going to do it for a Friday edition of The Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You can visit the website, get more information by going over to nickcraig.com. That's going to do it. We are back Monday morning at 7 right here on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Have a great weekend. We'll chat with you Monday morning.